We're starting a new semester in our class on the Jewish home, and we'll start again, even though this is a continuation. When we speak about the Jewish home, we're talking about the relationship that Be'ezrat Hashem will be the most rewarding and meaningful relationship in your life. Everything you do, just as we discussed earlier tonight, that everything you do stems from your balance. You can't fight without being balanced. It's very hard even to write if you're not well-balanced. I have a friend who's a therapist. I once said to him, can you counsel me on how to write well so my hand doesn't get tired? So he said, the first thing is a question of which seat you sit in. And then it's a question of how you sit in the seat. And then it's a question of whether you sit near a table and you could put your arm down and be balanced. And then we could focus on how you hold the writing instrument. But first is a question of your posture, how you're balanced. Well, you know what? Posture affects everything. So too, the marriage, the home that you're building, affects everything. It's a question of what type of parent you're going to be and what type of member of society. It's very hard. Everything we do is affected by it. And it affects everything, and everything can affect it. So when we speak about the Jewish home, we're talking about one of the most important things you're going to do in life. We all want to have an impact on the world. And for most of us, the greatest impact we have is at home. Meaning, when we leave this world, we might discover the cure for AIDS or cancer, and then we might not. But we might be able to bring children to the world and leave our mark in the world with the home that we built. And so when we speak about the home, we are not talking about dating. Our class begins the day after you're married or after you walk out of the chuppah. Our class is not about how to choose a wife. It's about how to build a relationship with a wife. Don't confuse the two. They're two totally separate topics. They might seem connected. They're not really. What you're looking for is a totally separate question. We'll discuss at the end of the year.
How to choose a wife, how to keep the marriage running.
Right. We're talking about how to keep the marriage running. And so the first issue you have to know is that almost everyone regrets having gotten married. Look at that. You get married. And then you say to yourself, what am I doing here? When I was a kid, there was this thing called quantum leap. You guys grew up with that, or it wasn't around when you were growing up, yeah? Where suddenly he finds himself in this body, and he's like, oh, where am I, right? That's what happens in marriage. You find yourself married, and one morning you get up, and you look, and you say, huh? And so, surprise, it can happen the first morning you're married. And to some people, it happens as they're standing under the chuppah. They ask themselves, I told you guys the great story. I come to a friend's house, and he has this beautiful picture, like full wall picture, of him standing under the chuppah, smiling as he walks out of the chuppah towards his wife. And we're home alone, and he says, I'll tell you a story, and you could tell it over in class, just don't tell it to my wife. I said, fine, okay, what's the story behind the story? He says, that picture is my wife's favorite picture. She blew it up, put it on this wall because it's her favorite picture. You know what the story behind that picture is? I'm standing there under the chuppah, and I see my wife coming down the aisle. And I'm looking down the aisle, and I look at her, and she looks at me, and she smiles, and I ask myself, what am I doing here? And I'm standing there under the chuppah, and the music's playing, and my mind starts racing. And I say to myself, could we stop this for a second? Yeah. I want to think about this. Give me a minute. And she's walking. And I'm standing there thinking, and I look down, and everyone thinks I'm praying. And I'm not praying. I'm trying to think, how did I get here? Why am I doing this? And as she's walking, I'm telling myself, you know, if I walk out, what would happen if I said, I just have to go to the bathroom for a minute? Why don't Hassan ever leave the chuppah? You know, bathroom break, just a second. Let me have a minute to think. And I'm thinking to myself, he says, and I can't figure out why I'm marrying this girl. I'm standing there under the chuppah wondering what I'm supposed to do. And I look down and I say to myself, if I stop this right now, well, she's never been married. She won't be divorced. It's not so nice. It's not so much fun. But we already paid for the food. We already paid for the hall. People could sit and enjoy themselves. But I have to get married because we paid for the food in the hall. And he's looking down and he's trying to think, why? What am I doing? Why? And he closes his eyes and he tries to have clarity. And he peeks and he sees she's already advanced and the music's playing. And he's trying to think and he can't think for the life of him. What am I doing here? So he closes his eyes and he thinks to himself. And he says to himself, okay, I don't know why I am marrying her, but I think I can make it work with her. She's not a bad girl. I'm just not sure she's the best girl. But can I make it work with her? Yeah, I can make it work with her. We can have a happy marriage together. And then he says to himself, you know, for generations, Am Yisrael is benefiting from the fact that Rachel wouldn't embarrass Leah. She divulged the secret sign so that Leah wouldn't be embarrassed under the canopy. He closes his eyes and he offers a silent prayer. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I think I can make it work with this girl. Help me out. I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. I can't think clearly now, and I do think it's the right thing to do. He said to me, you know, when we walked out of the Cheder Yichud and all the pressure was down, everything was clear as day, but I almost destroyed my life under that chuppah because I couldn't think clearly. Suddenly the pressure was driving me crazy. He says to me, you know what I did? I decided I could make it work. I'm going to make it work. I put on the biggest smile on my face, which was fake, and walked out of the chuppah. And the cameraman snaps that picture of me walking towards the kala. He says to me, my wife takes this picture and she shows all her friends. You see how happy he was to marry me, how he feels he lucked out. And I'm never going to say a word. He says, she blew up the picture. It's in the living room. You walk into the house. She shows everyone how I'm so crazy over her. He says to me, but that's the real story behind it. He says, at that moment, I wasn't crazy over her at all. At that moment, I was thinking I could make this work. Well, you have to know, again, post-marriage, you could make it work. But every marriage requires work. No marriage goes smoothly. If you think, oh, my friends, they're so happily married, that's because you're not there. When you're not around, you don't know how they're yelling at one another. You don't know how many difficulties they have. No marriage works on autopilot. A dead marriage works on autopilot. Will you take out the garbage? Will you pick up the kids? It's raining today. Oh. If you're alive, and we are alive, if you're alive, then there's going to be dynamics. It's going to be difficult. And the only way it's going to work is if you're ready to work. And if you're ready to work, then you can create the happiest, most wonderful thing in the world. But it's the hardest thing in the world. Nothing harder than that. Nothing. If the Torah tells you that Hashem compares His relationship with us and our relationship with the Torah, the most meaningful things in our life are compared to the relationship with a woman, so then it must be something very, very good. Well, you know what? Things that are very, very good require a lot of work. And the first thing you have to know is that you will regret it. You will get married, Bezat Hashem, and you will find yourself looking at it and saying, what did I do? Why? There are good people in the world. Why did I marry her? Right? So everyone thinks it happens to everyone else. Let me tell you, it happens to everyone. I haven't interviewed everyone, but everyone I know, it's happened to. The fact of the matter is that after a person gets married, science calls it the disenchantment stage. Meaning in psychology, it has the name. It's called disenchantment. There's enchantment, you're all enchanted. And then you suddenly realize what real life with this person's going to be like. And that can happen the minute of the chuppah. It can happen the morning after the wedding. It can happen a year or two down the road. Most couples suffer the first 2 years of marriage because the first 2 years are very difficult. We have different preferences. And suddenly we have to deal with one another's personalities and foibles, human weaknesses. It's not fun. It's very, very difficult. But you have to know the first challenge is regretting the fact that you're married to the person. And no marriage can withstand that. When you're in a marriage and you're asking yourself, will this work? Then it won't. If you're asking yourself, how can I make it work? Then it will. Those are two different questions. And human nature, male human nature, is that you tell yourself, there are plenty of girls out there, I don't have to put up with this. The Talmud says, one of the reasons behind the laws of family purity is that the tendency of man is to get sick and tired of the woman. Women have different issues in the marriage. But male, that our weakness is that our tendency is we take them for granted and we get tired of them. Comes the Torah and says, 12 days, no touching. You could talk, don't touch. 12 days. Not an easy mitzvah. And usually it ends up being 13. It's not 12. You'll learn the laws, you'll understand the details. Suddenly after 13 days, you're like a young chassan. You come home early, you clean the house, you take a shower, you take a shave. Boy, it's a new marriage. She comes home from the mikveh, you're excited all over again. That, says the Gemara, is one of the reasons why the Torah gave us this mitzvah, the laws of family purity. Because we need that. But what we have to remember is that it's natural and normal that we have buyer's remorse and that we start thinking, hey, maybe this was a mistake. And in order for a marriage to work, we have to do mind over matter. I'm married to this person. I made the decision. And from now on, the question is not, will it work, but how can I make this work? And if and one of the rules, one of the cardinal rules you have to remember in marriage is that there are words that don't show up at home. One of them is divorce. You never talk about it. You never joke about it. We will have a special class about this topic. You don't threaten with it. Divorce is not a word that exists in the home. And when it does, God forbid, so then the word itself destroys the marriage. So that's, we will have a separate class on that topic. Yes, Yaakov?
I was just wondering, when you say that you were giving a shiur to women in some seminary, would you be saying different things probably? Would they not also be naturally having a little bit of anxiety, uncertainty, or even doubt about the new marriage? Or is it different?
Women are different than men. Women are different than men in many ways. And it's very good that you're mentioning this at the beginning of this series, because one of the worst things that happens is that women listen to this class, and then they send the link to their husband, because the class is very focused on what you guys have to do. So they say, honey, go listen to that class. He's going to tell you what marriage is supposed to look like. I'm not talking about what marriage is supposed to look like. I'm talking about what men have to do in a marriage. If I were talking to women, we would be talking about totally different things. Okay. For example, most women during the engagement period regret getting engaged to this person. They might not tell you that. Most. I'm not saying all, but most. And most women, I'll give you a description of how one woman described the last month towards marriage. Okay? I don't know if she said it to her husband, but she said, it's like this. You look forward down the road, and you say, in 30 days, I'm going to be married to this man. And it feels like you just put your neck back on the guillotine, and you're looking up, and you're watching the knife slowly approach. And that's how you look at it. And you talk to him about marriage, and he is so unrealistic. You try talking about practical things, and his head's in the clouds. It's going to be great. Everything's going to be fine. Don't worry about a thing. You talk to the guy, and he's all excited. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm marrying a dunce. This guy, he has no clue what life is going to be like. So women have a different hardship. They are more practical than men, and they have different hardships than men. Their hardships in marriage involve listening to the neighbor tell her about how her husband took out the garbage this morning, and then she goes to work, and the coworker tells her about how her husband is picking up the kids this afternoon. And then on her way home, she speaks to her mom and she hears about how her dad is making dinner. And she comes home and she looks at her husband and she says, you didn't do the garbage. You didn't do the kids. You didn't make dinner. What's wrong with you? And he's looking at him like, you didn't ask me any of those. What are you talking about, right? She's just heard from all her friends different stories. And now all of them are relevant at home. And she's seething. She's bubbling. By the time she gets home, it's like, you good for nothing. And he says, what do you mean? You asked me to go and take care of your taxes. I took care of your taxes. You asked me to fill the gas. I filled the gas. You asked me to buy clothing for the kids. I bought clothing for the kids. Whatever you asked me, I did. You never asked me these other things. But a woman's hardships in marriage are different than a man's hardships in marriage. A woman's hardships are, why didn't you know I wanted you to take me out last night? What do you mean? You didn't ask, right? Us men were so simple. If only you'd ask, I'd do it. No problem. I have to beg. Did I say you have to beg? Just ask.
It's almost like there's a practical arrangement.
So women's hardships in marriage are totally different than men's. And we're not talking to women here, I think.
No,
they're all men.
It's good to know because that's what they're going to do.
Our class is focused on what you guys have to know. And I rarely give class to women, but the women should know that our class is really focused on what men have to know. And of course, if I were talking to women, I would talk totally different to them.
But isn't it important for a man to know that this is what his woman's wife is going through?
We'll get there. But I have to teach patience. To women, I have to teach, if I were teaching women, how to work with their weaknesses, with men's weaknesses and their weaknesses. But each one has to learn a different lesson. It's not the same. It's a good question. Yeah, it's a very important question. Yes?
In your experience, does it seem to be that men or women tend to wreck their marriages?
I think that it's practically impossible to know who's destroying a marriage. Even though the halacha describes extreme examples where the halacha blames one or the other, it says there are certain things a person can't live with. It says if you come home and your wife starts telling you how your parents are horrible people, that's something that's very hard to live with. There are certain things, Mikalelis Yoldav Bifanov, the Gemara says, there are certain things that are impossible. If any time you're intimate with your wife, she goes and calls the neighbor and describes what happened last night, the Talmud says that's something a man can't live with. There are certain things you can't live with. But most of the time, within normal difficulties in marriage, it's very hard to know who's really destroying the marriage. The rule we're going to discuss is it takes one to tango. A person has to take responsibility to make the marriage work. And every person feels like they're doing 150%, and the other party is slacking off. I don't know of a couple that'll tell you. I don't know, the famous story of the guy who for 30 years he's working in the attic, learning and studying, and his wife never asks him for a thing. She brings up the meals, and she takes care. She works and funds the family. She sends the kids through education, and she takes care of everyone. And then the day comes that they're marrying off a kid, and of course he didn't even know the kid got engaged. He's in his studies, and she comes up to the attic, and she says, Chaim, our son's getting married. You have to put on a jacket. It's time to go to the hall. And she brings him the jacket, and she holds it up, and he leans on the table, and he says, oh, it's so difficult to bring up kids. So difficult to bring up kids these days, right? Every person's that way. You know, we laugh at the other guy, but we all take for granted what our spouse does for us. Women take for granted what men do. Men take for granted what women do. And everyone expects the other party to do more. What they do is a given. What they don't do is super annoying and unreasonable. That's the attitude we all have. So it's very hard, even if you think you know what's going on in a marriage, it's very hard to get to the bottom of it to know who's really at fault. I could tell you many stories, but that's the bottom line. I wouldn't point a finger. I would say we all have to work. Marriage requires a lot of work, and it firstly requires a shift of perspective. One of the most problematic issues that we have today is that we enter marriage with a Western concept. It's normal that we think about romance. We should. That's what drives a person to get married. But if a person's focus is that marriage is all about that, it's true that that's the drive that gets us married. It's like the Kuzari and the Rambam write. There's nothing logical about it. You know, if you think about marriage, you're certainly investing a lot, and you're getting a lot of heartache out of it. So why are you doing it? I want kids. Really? That's why you're doing it? No. Hashem created us that we have a tremendous inner drive to be married. Man does not want to live his life alone. A man is very scared of ending up alone. And so Hashem created that drive where we want to get married, and that's an important drive. But we also have to shift our perspective about marriage. Meaning our great weakness is that in the movies you don't see anything about work. What you see is the marriage is good or the marriage stinks. People are happy or people are sad. But you don't see long-term work. And especially our generation, I won't ask the question, but in previous classes I've asked, how many people are either divorced themselves or come from a home that's divorced? Or I've asked differently, is there anyone here whose parents are not divorced? And in most classes, you barely see one or two hands going up. So we're a generation that really has to reinvent the wheel. Meaning most of us have grown up in seeing dysfunctional homes. Homes where the parents did not make it work, and that makes it so much harder for us to figure out how to make it work. Our first inclination when things go bad is, I don't have to put up with this. I just saw my dad pull out when things looked like this, or my mom pull out when things looked like this. So that makes it much harder for us to make it work. But that doesn't mean we can't make it work. We could. You know, in every circumstance, when a person grows up seeing something, they have a choice. They can either replicate it or react to it. And our goal here is to react to it. Our goal is to say, I saw what it did, and I'm not gonna do that. I'm going to figure out how to make it work, even though it's going to be hard. And that's why our class is going to focus on the hardships and how to make it beautiful and how to make it work. I want to end on a positive note. Marriage should be fun. Marriage should involve happy times together, smiley times together. There's a famous story I grew up with where a guy sends a letter to his relative. His relative lives in many towns yonder, and he sends a letter and he says, Chaim, I'm deathly ill, I'm about to die, please come and see me. So the guy gets a letter from his brother, he quickly packs his bags and he schleps over there, he takes a caravan, he tells his wife, you run the business, make everything work, I have no choice, I have to go, my brother's going to die. He shows up by his brother and everything seems festive. He comes into the house and his brother says, I'm so happy you made it, you're just in time, tomorrow's the wedding. He says, wedding? What wedding? I thought you were dying. He says, Chaim, looky here. If I were telling you I was marrying off a daughter, you'd say, I'm busy. I got a business. For weddings, who has time? I told you I was dying. Now you have time. You made it across. You came. You're here. Now we'll celebrate tomorrow together. But that's true. My mother always used to tell us, don't only make time for sad things. In life, when sad things happen, then everyone stops their life. People go to funerals, people go to visit shivakals. But when there's a wedding, it's like, oy vey, who has time, who has patience? It's so hard, you got to go and sheva brachos. No, the happy things in life are beautiful, and they're what make life beautiful. And we have to make time for happy things. Marriage running its own course will be difficult. But if we invest time and we say, we'll have a night a week where we make date night. We'll have a night a week where we go out. When there are fun things, we'll go and do them. We won't just say, I'm too tired. You go and play ball with your kids. You build a clubhouse with your kids. You take the time to do the fun and beautiful things. You take a camera along. You sit down and you look at the pictures after you took them. You start going down memory lane together. You create positive moments. The nature of marriage, as we discussed, is that it's difficult. The beauty of marriage, well, we can help that come out. We can help bring it to light, and that's part of our job.